Hey, this is the Steiner Recliner, and you are listening to the Music Podcast from KCSU-FM. Recently, I had the chance to talk to Johnny Ashburn from the Massachusetts post-rock band Caspian. Johnny and I discussed the inspiration behind their most recent album, Dust and Disquiet, as well as the EP they just released this year, Castles High, Marble Bright. Among other things, we also discussed his profession as a woodworker, Caspian's rigorous tour schedule, and his entrance into the band. Check it out.
Hey, this is Johnny from Caspian.
Hey, Johnny, how you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing all right, dude. How have you been?
Pretty good.
Very nice. Very nice. How's tour treating you?
It's all right. We had our trailer blow up the other day, but we're all safe. So.
Oh, goodness.
Other
what happened?
That, everything's pretty good, man. Yeah.
What happened with the trailer?
What's that?
What happened with the trailer?
Long story. Axle blew off again.
Oh, no. But all the gear is okay? Yeah. You guys are all good?
Yeah, totally.
Very nice, man. Well, I mean, besides that that atrocity, like you said, tour's been going well, life's been okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, very much so.
Nice, man. Well, let's just get into it. There's a lot I want to get into with you as far as, Dust and Disquiet, as well as the Castles High, Marble Bright EP. But first of all, I kind of want to talk about your musical upbringing as a musician. One of the things I appreciate about Caspian so much is, I guess, just how orchestral you guys are, the fact that the instrumentation kind of stands alone. So I'm curious if you have any background, like in an orchestral setting, or if you just kind of grew up playing guitar.
I'm one of the ones who just grew up playing guitar. Aaron, one of our guitar players, is classically trained, and does a lot of the scoring for, the string section. Phil's also pretty involved in that side of things. I grew up in DC, kind of in the old, like, Fugazi kind of, hardcore scene, or something like that. So I had a little bit more like just edgy, like self-taught upbringing when it came to learning guitar, as opposed to some of the other guys. But it's nice to have like a diverse approach to things, I think, as well.
Very cool. And so what, can you talk a little bit about what your earlier experiences were like playing in bands then? Were you more of a kind of a hardcore kind of dude?
Yeah, like a little mathier, edgier kind of stuff. I mean, I spent years just trying to find people who would get out on the road, like unsuccessfully for years and years until Caspian. Right. So it's nice to have finally found that. I mean, it's just tough to find people that would, walk away from jobs and girlfriends and stuff, which is completely understandable. It just took a little while, but these guys have always been all super dedicated and really in it for the long haul, which I respect quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. So what, I guess that leads to my next question. How did you come to be involved in Caspian?
I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I was playing with my band there. And this was 7 or 8 years ago. And we played a show with Caspian. They crashed in my place. I made them breakfast in the morning, and they asked me if I wanted to do 70 shows in 74 days in Europe out of nowhere. So they're like, last night was your tryout. I was like, I did not know that. that's the long and short of it. Yeah, right away, just kind of dropped everything and started playing with them.
Wow. I guess the pancakes were also pretty sweet too, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, well, it was like breakfast sandwiches. I've got a special breakfast sandwich that I make touring bands. So, I think that might have been it.
Dude, even better. So what was that first European tour like?
It was 70 shows in 74 or 76 days or something like that. I mean, it was long and grueling, but for me, it was my first, it was my first real big tour. And, I think maybe my second time in Europe, but I couldn't have had any more fun on that tour. It was a chance to get out and see how things worked in the music world for real, overseas, and get to, we didn't have a lot of time to go out and see stuff, and we still don't really when we are on the road. But we made some time here and there catch some sights and meet people, and just being able to play music in a different city every day for a bunch of people who are enjoying it is a real privilege. And yeah,
for sure. And so, I mean, if you guys did 70 days, you probably covered a pretty good part of Europe then.
Yeah, I think we did all of it. I mean, I don't know what part we missed or could have missed in 70 days.
Yeah.
I'm sure I know it. You know, I know that we were down in Spain and France, and that we were up in Scandinavia, probably over in Poland, I think, on that tour as well. And I'm not sure if we hit the UK on that one, but I think we did as well. I mean, it was really, that was an all-encompassing tour for sure. And I don't know if we've ever done 3 months with, you know, that kind of schedule since then. I mean, I certainly don't recommend it.
Yeah.
Doing more than once at least. But once you're through it, it's nice to have done it.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys already have a pretty grueling tour schedule as well, right?
Yeah, we've been out for quite a bit this year. I think I don't have the exact amount of time, but I'd say we've been, since the record came out last September, and so I feel like we've been out for at least half the year, if not more than that, on and off. So yeah, it's been quite a bit. Been hitting the US pretty hard this cycle, and I dig it. It's a big beautiful country. It's nice to get out and see it. There's a lot of, I mean, it's, I feel like the US is as diverse as Europe is, but all within the same country. And there's quite a bit to see here. So
yeah, I guess that's a good point. In the US, you at least see a little bit of crossover where you're going, but Europe, there, I'm assuming, at least maybe on that tour, or if you said you've been there before, there was a little bit of that culture shock kind of seeing stuff.
Yeah, we definitely got a little bit of that going over to Europe for a while. And now it's a little bit more, you know, it's a little bit more normal for us. For us is like China. When we go, it's, you know, still a little bit of a culture shock. I mean, in a great way. So yeah, just always looking for somewhere new to go, you know, something new to experience, and being in a band is a pretty good way to do that, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, very cool. How do you feel like you manage all that then, especially being on the road as often as you guys are?
Not as well as I could. Yeah, I don't know. I was just talking to one of our guitar players, Aaron, yesterday. We had a couple minutes before we had to leave the hotel in the morning, and I was just sitting down with my computer doing some work because I do woodworking when I'm at home, so I've got a, you know, business on the side, and I was sitting down doing work, and we had a little short conversation about how tough it is to like get motivated to like do all the other real life things you have to do, like when you're on tour, just because it's pretty exhausting. Like, we've got plenty of time in the van, but like, do I want to like pull up sketches and start drawing stuff out and sending emails to clients in the van? I kind of just want to get a little bit more sleep and just like press snooze and wake up at the venue, you know. So it's not easy, like getting everything, keeping all your ducks in a row while you're on tour. It takes a lot of intentionality, I think, in terms of staying in touch with family and friends while we're all out on the road, and keeping our respective businesses going while we're away. But it's doable. Not easy, but definitely doable.
Yeah, for sure. And now I'm actually fascinated. You said you are a woodworker. What if, do you have kind of an area within that that you focus on, or something that you feel like you really specialize in?
I guess I'd like to be doing mostly furniture. I still enjoy, I've been doing carpentry since I was 18. So I don't know how many years, 20 or 15, 16 years. And it was just, I was building houses for a long time. But now I've got my own business, and it can't be too large scale because we're on tour all the time.
Yeah.
but I like doing furniture and building decks, doing, you know, custom built-ins and stuff like that, building stuff for my wife. So, yeah, definitely a lot of work keeping all that stuff together while we're on tour, for sure, because I got to make sure I come back to work and leave with, you know, when I leave, make sure everything's done. But I'm pretty lucky in that I get to do two things that I really love. And yeah, so.
Nice, man. I mean, that is the dream, though. You're, yeah, quite literally making a living off of
it's your not passion. It's not easy, and it's time consuming, and it's crazy, but it definitely is the dream for sure.
Nice, very cool. I am definitely curious too. Have you ever forayed into the world of being like a luthier?
You know what? I haven't yet. I absolutely will. Yeah. That's something that'll come when I have a little bit more free time. That's going to have to start as like a passion project, and free time is pretty difficult for me to find.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from, I get to do two things that I love, and trying to find like fit, you know, free time in between all that's kind of tough. But, I definitely at some point we'll get into that. I imagine it'll start with like building, you know, amp cabs and stuff like that. And, you know, buying necks and building a guitar body. I would love to. I imagine the next couple of years I'll give something like that a shot. I'd certainly prefer to make stuff myself.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Nice, man. Well, I'm definitely going to stay tuned for that, because with the tone that you guys have, I would love to see what you do.
Cool, man. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And
yeah, I'm looking forward to the Denver show, man.
Dude, I am too. It's going to be so great to see you guys play. Cause I got a little taste of it. I watched your guys' Audio Tree of Live session.
Cool.
And then I kept watching it because there's something about that session. I think the visual elements to your guys' show, as well as just, I don't know, just sonically how diverse your band is. Like, there was a lot of it, and I'll get into it in a little as well. Just kind of talking about that. I think what I really want to talk about with you too is the juxtaposition of Dust and Disquiet, as well as Castles High and Marble Bright, just because you know, Dust and Disquiet definitely had a like a louder but a darker tone to it compared to previous releases. And so I'm a little curious how you guys were feeling going into that one.
We spent a lot of time writing that record. It was a pretty, we were in our space for 8 months doing 3 or 4 days a week, writing that record. And it was definitely a super emotional record for us. And there's some pretty dark spots in that record. And I'd say overall, it's a darker record. There's certainly hints of hope in there. But I think the biggest one is in Castles High, Marble Bright, which got recorded in that same session, but didn't make it onto the record for various reasons, just kind of saving something for later. And also just didn't quite fit with the flow. We're closing with that song on this tour, and I can't say I've ever had more fun playing a Caspian song every night. It's really nice to have that song out there. It's just such a joyful expression for us. You know, it's a little it's a little happier than almost everything, I guess, on Dust and Disquiet, and a nice, like, uplifting note for us to end these shows on.
Yeah.
We took a hiking trip, for our guitar player, Aaron, got married, and his bachelor party, we, went up into the White Mountains and did some hiking. And the name came from that trip. I don't know how much more I could dig into that, but it's just certainly like a time of like peace and like togetherness and hopefulness that we all really connected with. And kind of every time we play that song, it just reminds me of being on top of those mountains together as a band, you know.
It's a
pretty excellent experience.
And sorry, that's the first song off the EP, right, you're talking about?
That is, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yep. That definitely makes sense, because I heard Dust in This Quiet, and I mean, I loved it because of how, you know, heavy it was, and like how dark it was. But yeah, compared to like previous stuff I'd heard from you guys, I knew you guys definitely took a turn. And you know, given the events that happened around that record, I think it made sense. But I think you guys definitely captured that image though of like hope and basically standing on a mountain as well. Because that's I don't know, that's what I felt with the EP. It's very a lot of tremolo picking, a lot of really high notes. It's a big fan.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Very
the,
cool.
The other song on there, 127 North, is was just, there was one day in our practice space where we record pretty much every rehearsal. Like at the end, we'll take what we did and record it. And I think that second song on there, 127 North, was really just one rehearsal where at the end we recorded, you know, we had that and didn't touch it until we got into the studio. And then in the studio, it's like, hey, let's just mess around, all get in the same room all at the same time. Like no overdubs, nothing, just all of us in the same room doing this thing that we did this one day at our rehearsal space. So that's, I mean, process wise, it was certainly like way out of our element, but a really nice departure from what we normally do as well. That was pretty fun to do something that way, kind of be in the same room, because normally it's started with drums, going to guitar, or you know, bass, and then guitars and overdubs and stuff like that, and to be able to kind of just be there all together and record this one song together that we all wrote together on more or less one day was a pretty neat experiment for us.
Wow. So that does lead me to another question then. When you guys are writing, it sounds like it's fairly meticulous in how you guys have everything planned out. Whereas that song sounds more like there was an element of improvisation to it.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. It's a very, our writing process is a whiteboard filled with stuff.
Wow.
But that one was not really, that one was just, you know, that was just us getting together and having fun, you know, the day we wrote it and the day we recorded it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're always having fun when we're usually having fun when we're writing. But that, you know, that was a different kind of feeling, which was nice.
Nice. Very cool. Would you say then that you guys would kind of open, maybe like change it up then to add more elements of improv to it? Or are you guys pretty,
I wouldn't say improv. I think that might have been like a relatively special situation. We might experiment with doing some live recording, you know, doing a song or two like that song where we all record everything together, you know, if it's an appropriate song for that. Some songs will lend themselves to a process like that, I think. But I don't know if improvisation is really are like the way that we work. It's fairly complicated stuff that's very, it's intentional and composed. Improvisation has never really been like what we did between when we write something and when we record it. Things will get changed here and there, but once it's recorded, things are pretty nailed down. I mean, almost completely. There's some small changes here and there that we would make, but it's not really improvisation. It'd just be little tweaks, you know. And a lot of time it's just pedal tricks.
Yeah.
So if anything has changed, but.
Right. It sounds like for the most part, somebody will come in with an idea and you guys will just kind of add on top of it or subtract from it.
Yep.
Nice. Very
cool. Yeah, more or less. Yeah, for sure. And then, sometimes we'll spend the whole, you know, four hours on writing 15 seconds of an ending of a song. Wow. And that's, you know, that gets a little trying sometimes. It's like, oh man, I need to go up and have a smoke, like rethink this, you know? So it takes all shapes and sizes to get these songs out. And we're not opposed to using, any method, you know, there's not one thing that works for us. It's really a mix of anything, and any good idea that anybody has is kind of, is just welcome anywhere, you know?
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Very cool. That's interesting. And I think it definitely reflects on your guys' records, because everything sounds like it should be there. You know, there isn't
That's
much of a question.
Great to hear.
I am curious then how intentional that is with sequencing, because it seems like every record has sort of a narrative arc to it. And I know on your Audio Tree session, you guys are kind of keep the story under wraps with everything it is. But would you say there is kind of an arc to most of the stuff that you guys try to write?
Absolutely. And in terms of the order of the record, Phil does a lot of that. And even with set lists, he's got a real good eye for understanding how, you know, one song is a mountain and another song is a valley, and you kind of go back and forth between these two places, and how, you know, how they connect and how they work together. He's got a great understanding of that, and it really helps once these songs are written for us to pull things together. And even before the songs are all done being written, it's like, hey, this is kind of how this record is feeling. Like, what are we missing here? What are these last couple songs gonna portray? What feeling are they gonna give out? You know. And kind of work to make that a reality, and kind of stitch all those different pieces together.
Nice. And I guess just at the end, just kind of like try and convey an emotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool, man. Well, finally, I am curious. I'm a bit of a gearhead. So I saw your Audio Tree session. You guys all have massive boards.
Totally.
I'm just kind of curious what your top three pedals are that you have been loving on these days.
My favorite right now are a company called Fuzzrocious.
Okay.
I've got three other pedals, two fuzz pedals and a reverb pedal. It's kind of a smaller boutique operation, but their heavy distortion sounds are unrivaled to me, and they've got some pretty cool tricks, and they will mod, like, they'll modify any pedal that they have, or take any two pedals that they have and put them into the same pedal for you. And just some pretty cool stuff that they're doing. So I dig Fuzzrocious stuff in general. I mean, I guess like Strymon would go without saying. I mean, those guys get that, their tone chasing ability is incredible.
Their reverbs are amazing.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, the only reason I didn't get the Blue Sky is because there's already two of them in the band. So I got the Flint, which is like the reverb tremolo pedal. Really dig that one. And it's a pretty integral part to some of the songs we're doing. And and then, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say the Line 6 DL4 because that piece of crap breaks all the time, but I can't live without it.
That's a lot of delays you got there, so it's definitely a Swiss Army knife, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've gone through so many of them. It's always disappointing when they break, but it's also inevitable. There are ways around it, I think. I haven't moved there yet, but it'll probably happen soon. We'll see.
Yeah.
Next time it breaks, I might just get fed up and get one of the alternatives. But yeah, I mean, I've been using that one forever. You know, Dave from Minus Barry, who's like four of those things, and he's got like two backups because they break all the time. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
man.
Love pedal. I think I counted all of our pedals the other day, and it was like 70 something.
Wow.
Yeah. I was shocked that was that many pedals, and that I could count that high.
<You're>... I feel like given your job, you got the counting down though, right?
I can. I'm really good at fractions too.
There you go. So, Johnny, you got the whole package.
Yeah, dude. We'll see. You know, it's a lifelong struggle keeping all that stuff in the back of my head there.
Very nice. Well, yeah, man, that's God, it's hilarious. Because yeah, I remember looking at it and I was trying to see how you guys are getting all those awesome sounds, and that makes sense with the fuzz with Fuzzrocious. Are you using their rat at all?
I'm using the demon. Two
Oh, okay.
different demons. One of them has like a clean boost on it and a different setting. So two demons and then the Afterlife reverb pedal, which is cool because it's got that extra, I don't know what kind of switch you would call it, but you just, you hold the switch down and it creates a reverb swell.
Oh.
That's pretty neat. I'd use that for a part that I wish I had found before we recorded the record, but
Yeah.
it's one of those little changes that little things that have that, that happen after the fact. But
Yeah, for sure.
yep.
Well, very cool, Johnny. Well, thank you so much for your time, man. And I definitely look forward to seeing you guys. And I really, really look forward to hearing what you guys put out in the future.
Yeah, man, come say hey for sure. That would be awesome. And for everybody else listening, November 9th, Marquee Theater in Denver. It's going to be a good time with the Appleseed cast. It's been a pleasure being on tour with those dudes.
Yeah, that is a stacked tour. My goodness, I saw that. I was like, that is an amazing lineup.
Yeah, really a dream tour for us. Those guys are super nice dudes and an excellent musician. So it's really an absolute pleasure.
Nice, man. Very cool. Johnny, I can't thank you enough, man, and safe drive and safe travels.
Hey, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at 90.5 KCSU, on our website at kcsufm.com, and over the airways at 90.5.